Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. Whatever you heard about me, you know it's just a rumor, right? I'm Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I'm your dead boyfriend, Siren Rex Fry. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture. And today we have a very special guest.
I'm your undead boyfriend's World War II dog tags you wear in a romantic gesture to distract from the fact that this relationship is arguably necrophilia, Mimi Duncan, but you can call me Madge.
Madge has been a friend of mine for over a decade, as well as being a former sales associate at a sex shop. She is also a self-published indie romance novelist, and we are super excited to have you here, Madge.
I am very excited to be here, so long as my audio continues to work.
We had some technical difficulties in preparing for this episode, but we are so happy to be in the feed, and we are happy that you are here. So today we are talking about Charmed, Season 1, Episode 21, Love Hurts.
The title is kind of boring, but the episode is great. I guess I should mention it's a reference to a 1975 Nazareth song, and the lyrics are kind of, we're not really related.
I forgot to do the IMDb stuff, so I'm going to look that up on my phone right now. Sorry. Okay, so according to IMDb, this episode rated 8.2 out of 10 and is the one where Leo returns to San Francisco to beg the sisters to protect a woman who is being stalked by a demonic stalker. Wow. How incredibly basic. The episode was written by Chris Levinson and directed by James Whitmore Jr.
Was it? Because you sounded really unsure.
Bitch, I was reading, okay?
Just checking. Before we get too into this one, we do just want to give you a domestic violence and stalking content warning. Obviously, I hope that you have come to know us well enough to know that we will not be mocking or trying to do anything to make victims of these kinds of situations uncomfortable, but the episode heavily focuses on this kind of situation and has like a lot of just like scary things to consider and discuss because of that.
What are everyone's opinions about this episode?
Why don't you go first, Madge?
I love this episode. Like, for me, it is like a full 10 out of 10. For me, I really love the way that they handle the like sensitive subject matter and how like the overall episode really speaks to a lot of like the realities of domestic violence. And I mean, for like the time period that this episode was made in, I feel like that was kind of revolutionary almost. Like, even watching it like 20 odd years later, I think it's even really good by today's standards for like representation of abuse victims, basically. So I love this episode so much.
I'm a huge fan of this episode too. I would go as far as to say that this is one of my very favorite episodes, if not my favorite episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some others that are really good, but like this one is awesome. It's definitely the best one in season one for me, for sure. You know, like Madge said, I feel like this episode handles the domestic violence issue very well. It's very feminist about it, which is so on brand for Charmed at this point. What's kind of interesting about fantasy media is that you can tackle really hard, really difficult real-world subjects, and while the fact that they're supernaturally amped can make them even more frightening, but it also makes it safer for a viewer to watch in some cases. A lot of people can identify with what Daisy goes through in this episode, but the fantasy setting of it gives it sort of like a safe space to process, because even though what she's dealing with is super relatable, it's so unbelievable that you can sort of suspend your personal feelings about it and get the catharsis of watching the situation play out without feeling super triggered by it. So that is one reason that I really, really love this episode. This episode is also like super funny, and the magical issue in the episode is hilarious, which also, it's interesting to have a scary episode about domestic violence with like one of like the funniest gags they ever do.
Yeah, I think because there are quite a few different like moods that they shift throughout this episode, like with like the power switching storyline the abuse and stalking storyline and then Piper and Leo's storyline, I think they find a really good like emotional balance to make that like scary plotline palatable.
Yeah,
totally. I absolutely agree. I think this is a wonderful episode. I would almost counter Siren's opinion, surprise, surprise. Part of, I don't know if it's maybe the acting in this episode that gets me, the situation that Daisy is in, there's just something about the performance of Daisy and Alec that falls a little flat for me. And I can't really put my finger on why that is, but maybe as we go through the episode, I might be able to pinpoint it. I also need to counter Siren that I don't think that this is the best episode in season one. I think obviously that is the Wendigo.
Okay. Well, there's no accounting for Daisy.
That was obviously a joke.
I mean, it had better have been, or no one can take anything you say seriously for the next hour.
But yeah, there's just something about it that, about the performance of it, that falls a little short for me. I think that the situation itself is really frightening and is palatable because it's a supernatural situation, but there's just something about the acting that falls a little flat, in my opinion.
I can kind of see what you're saying, because this is something I put a lot of thought into. For me, I think it's some of, like, especially Alec's dialogue. Like, I mean, in a show like this, like, the villain dialogue can always, like, I think, get to be, like, a little overwrought and kind of, like, soap opera-ish.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. For me, though, like, it's kind of weird how Alec talks. Like, the things he says, that is how, like, that is truly how, like, abusers talk. So, I don't know. It's weird because you do kind of, like, fall into this, like, weird thing where it's, like, he sounds more like a caricature than a character.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I look back on, like, because I've had experience in a relationship like this, and when I look back on some of the things he said to me, I'm like, I know how scary it was, like, to hear that being said to me, but, like, in retrospect, I'm like, God, he sounded like such a fucking idiot. Like, it's kind of like, it feels really good to just like be able to make fun, like mock him for that now. But yeah, I mean, obviously when you're in that position, it's terrifying. But I'm lucky enough to have been able to get out of that situation, and I am now far enough away, like removed from it, or at least like the time it happened, that now I can just like look back and be like, what an absolute like CW villain wannabe. Just completely ridiculous. So I feel like that is kind of where some of that disbelief of this situation comes in.
Soap opera was definitely the right word for that, because it's definitely how it kind of comes off. And I mean, kudos to that guy for not being able to play an abuser well. The actor that plays Alec, I mean. Obviously, yeah. He's not an asshole, you know?
So I do think that Alec is a bit of a cartoon villain, but I don't feel the same way about Daisy. Daisy's one of my favorite parts of this episode. I think that she, like, really portrays, like, the panic and fear of being a victim in this kind of situation. I think she does it really well. But I also think that, like, I want to choose my words carefully here. She's powerless, but not helpless, if that makes any sense.
I think so.
Even though, I'm not trying to make, like, whatever I say is going to come out wrong. I'm just going to try. I don't want to make any kind of value statement about how people deal with being in abusive situations, because there's no right way to deal with the fact that you're being victimized, obviously. But I just feel like Daisy, like, shows us what a man like that can do to you, and how that, like, reduces, like, her options and her feelings and everything. But at the same time, she's just, like, I don't know, she keeps fighting even through her, like, helplessness, I guess, is what I want to say. I find it very compelling.
I can see your point of view there.
And I can relate to that.
No, I agree with what you said, Siren. She's, like, I think she portrays this character really, like, in a very vulnerable way. But she also, like, they talk a lot about what a good person Daisy is, because, I mean, she's a future white lighter. And I think that you can kind of see that, like, she doesn't lose, like, her goodness in this situation, because I mean, you see her like being kind of selfless later, where she's just trying to keep everyone else away from her because she thinks that's what's going to keep them safe. And that's a very, like, again, really applies to real world situations like that. The fact that a lot of victims are isolated by their abusers, but then, like, you can get to a point, depending on what happens, where you are trying to keep everyone away from you because you are trying to keep them safe from what is happening to you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that almost everything that happens between Daisy and Alec is an echo of like real life situations.
Yes. Thank you for sharing your story with us, by the way, Madge. We appreciate your perspective on this episode a lot. So thank you very much.
I am especially glad that you're here for this one with us. And I'm glad that you feel safe enough to talk about it with us and also like on the air like this. So yeah, just what Phoenix said. Thank you for sharing and thank you for being here.
I will say I might trip over my words a little bit when we like start talk, when we get into like nuances and the discussion of like Daisy's situation with Alec. But I do think it is important to talk about. It can be a little difficult, but I definitely feel safe and like on this platform with you guys to discuss it. So I'm definitely like happy to keep like to like get into that.
Thank you. You are welcome to share whatever you're comfortable sharing. There is no need to. Mm-hmm. To delve too deep into something that might be upsetting for you. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So this episode opens on a San Francisco street and Daisy is walking and seeming very panicked and frazzled with a bag of groceries and she drops them at the sound of a car horn. And then Leo orbs in like full view of the public and heals her finger. And they talk about a guy with powers that is after her and how Leo made Daisy invisible to Alec and Alec shows up looking for Daisy and they have like a dick measuring contest. And this whole scene is just exposition city.
I was actually going to say that this whole scene is just Leo being an idiot.
Yeah, he's not clever. And I think it's made very clear that Daisy like doesn't really know Leo's role in this situation because she's like, who are you? And he's like, you just have to trust me. And it's like, I don't think Daisy is in any position to trust a man ever again. So not the way to go about this. I know Leo has like a wholesome Gerber baby face, but
yeah, like... it's very, I don't know. It is very that. Well, this is sort of incongruous because like, yeah, like white lighters are supposed to like keep their secret from their charges or whatever in the beginning, or at least their non-magical ones. But then like at the point where he's like, I've magically shielded you and I'm going to heal you on this busy street, but I still can't tell you who I am. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe it's because Daisy is in danger, like magical danger immediately that he can reveal himself to her like that, but I don't know. And does anybody else feel like Daisy should just be on roller skates fighting crime like she's a Charlie's Angel?
And even like the part where she runs away, and I hate to make fun of like really much about this episode, but yeah, the way she runs away when he tells her to go is just like, it does look like she's on roller skates at first.
I mean, it was the 90s, maybe she had those like wheelie shoes.
Heelys, where you just have to lean back and you just zoom.
So yeah, so Alec shows up anyway, and Leo calls him a dark lighter. It's their first introduction of the dark lighters. Alec shoots Leo with a crossbow, and Leo just kind of stands there and lets that happen. Like, he did not know it was coming. And then he...
Even though Alec basically told him it was coming.
Yeah. Alec announced that he was going to kill him, and then also Alec was a dark lighter who's like... purpose is like to kill white lighters, and Leo knows all about this enough to tell the charmed ones about it in like 2 minutes, but it didn't occur to him
to move. Yeah,
so yeah, it also didn't occur to him to just orb away with Daisy instead of just sending her on her own.
Yes.
Well, he knew he had to stay there and do all that exposition before he could leave. That's where we're at. Yeah.
Listen, as much as I fucking love crossbows, it's not a practical weapon.
Yeah, crossbows are for chumps. Use a longbow.
Or, I mean, like...
they have a better critical rate anyway. Right? Right, guys? Anybody? Nobody knows what I mean.
I just feel like, how come demons don't use guns?
Well, you know, because bullets really don't do anything. Phoenix.
No damage is ever done by gun violence.
They're not potent weapons like umbrellas and shoes and shards of broken mirrors, you know?
It just doesn't look as good. It's like that, the Baz Luhrmann version of Romeo...
So Daisy is the major side character of this episode, and she's played by Lisa Robin Kelly, who you may know as Lori Foreman from That 70s Show. She was also on The X-Files, Married with Children, and Days of Our Lives, and was in the movie Jawbreaker. So sadly, Lisa passed away in 2013, and the details of her death are, like, pretty public knowledge at this point. So Lisa was... fired, or at least suspended, fired and brought back, unclear, from That 70s Show because she had a drug addiction issue That she struggled with
off
and on for, it seems like, most of her life after that point. They did bring her back on the show, but then she got recast after that. And she ended up dying of an alleged overdose in a rehab facility. So the whole thing is pretty sad.
Alec the Darklighter is played by Michael Trucco, who's still acting today. He's known for One Tree Hill, Battlestar Galactica, Castle, Revenge, How I Met Your Mother, which is a horrible show, it's Beverly Hills 90210, but not at the same time Shannon Doherty was on it, so who cares? So he's got quite the resume.
None of which is evident in this particular role.
Thank you for saying something else, because I was about to make a really stupid joke.
I don't know why you're pulling your punches now, because you've never stopped yourself from making a really stupid joke before.
Because I know that that one was stupid.
Oh, so the other ones you don't know.
You know what I do know? That you're a bitch.
This is becoming a very hostile work environment.
This is just typical.
Okay, so at the manor, the sisters are preparing for a trip to Cabo. Prue is wearing her bikini on the plane to, quote unquote, save time, because she thinks that she has no problems with demons right now. Phoebe and Prue try to high five over the fact that they want to get laid. The high five does not work out, and neither do their plans.
Aww.
And they start talking about Piper's current man slump and how, so she's packing a bunch of books to take on vacation.
This is the first of many, many, many times throughout the show that the sisters will be taking a dating hiatus or a break from men or what have you, only to either get back with the same guy or literally get married in the same episode. So, like...
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. Taking a hiatus from men is just 90s for I can't get a date right now.
Yeah.
But I'm an empowered woman about
this. This was my decision. Take it till you make it.
I'm currently taking a hiatus from men.
I've been taking one for like 10 years. So it's my decision.
Yes, it is, sweetie. Don't let her fool you. Madge has a very active relationship with Woody Harrelson in her own mind.
Listen, when the real world fails you, you have to find a way.
Who is Woody Harrelson?
I'm trying to think of what you might have seen. Have you ever seen Zombieland?
Oh, Tallahassee.
Yeah. And I got opinions about that movie.
Yeah, Madge has a daddy thing.
I mean, same. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think Phoenix can relate to that. So nice try, Siren.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the odd man out.
I'm not going to take another cheap jab at your foot fetish. I will not do it. I'm not going to kink shame you on the air anymore.
Oh my God, then what is the show?
Anyway, Madge, what happens next?
Oh God. Oh, well, what happens next is while they're talking about how Piper needs to take a break from men, Leo shows up. He crashes right into the attic. Piper screams. Prue and Phoebe run upstairs to see what's happening, and they find Leo, who has been injured of his own accord, basically, writhing on the attic floor, which is exactly how you want to see your ex-boyfriend.
I'm pretty sure that is not what Piper meant the last time she told Leo to come inside.
God damn it.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Are we suddenly making straight sex jokes to appeal to a wider audience? Because... I'm not about that.
Don't flaunt your heteronormative lifestyle. Yeah, so after that happens, we get the opening credits.
And the opening scene after the credits is so tense. It's like Prue, like, scrambling for first aid supplies in the bathroom while the song Human by The Pretenders plays in the background. And, like, they are hoarding hydrogen peroxide under that sink. Like, there's just, like, so many bottles of it. But, I mean, I guess, given their new lifestyle, they're getting injured.
I mean, you would think that at this point they would just buy a full first aid kit, you know? And that they would just, like, have a fully stocked... Like, I don't know about you guys, but in my workplace, we have a, like, duffel bag full of first aid supplies. Granted, right now it's mostly gauze pads, burn ointment, and band-aids, but I feel like with the way that they get injured most of the time, that's plenty.
I guess it's more dangerous to be a barista than a demon-fighting witch.
I'd rather fight demons than serve the general public, so...
I mean, what's the difference at the end of the day?
So Piper is pissed at Phoebe for not telling her that Leo's a white lighter, and Phoebe's like, bitch, I did say it. I said that. Piper is pissed. Piper didn't want to believe her. And Leo says that the arrow is poison, so they cannot touch it. And this is a continuity error, if I have ever seen one. Later, Dark Lighter poison only has any kind of effect on White Lighters.
Which is, I mean, really not how poison works.
No.
At all. But no, you're correct. Like, later it's, like, only, like, Leo and Paige who, like, can't touch the arrows. But right now it's just poison.
Yeah. For everybody. Dr. Prue just flings it out of him like it's nothing. And she did that shit for no reason. If we take into account the continuity error, Prue just wanted to be violent.
Basically. That should look like a hurt.
Yeah, it did.
So then Phoebe says that Leo is, like, Tinkerbell.
That drives me bananas, by the way.
What?
It drives me nuts that she says that, because Leo is not like Tinkerbell. Tinkerbell is basically just a mean groupie, and...
Yeah, Tinkerbell's a little bitch.
Yeah, she doesn't help anybody.
No, you know what Tinkerbell is? Tinkerbell is a gay man, because she's a little fairy, and if she doesn't get enough attention, she dies.
Basically.
Yeah.
Tinkerbell is...
You cracked
Phoenix.
It, I think. It's just it's a bad comparison to make to Leo. It's just irrelevant.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's just dumb. It's a dumb line.
I don't know why she wasn't like, have you ever seen that movie Angels in the Outfield?
Like that.
That's what Leo is, but for witches.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, for sure. That movie is terrible, and I can't believe you brought that up. What is wrong with you?
I had to watch it so many times when I was in Christian school.
Ew.
I know.
That is the worst thing you have said on this entire show.
Really?
I can't.
The worst thing?
Yeah, Angels in the Outfield at Christian school? Yes, that's the worst thing I've heard in my goddamn life.
I think the worst thing that you've ever said on this podcast is how your mom blames you for burning down your house.
It's hard to rank. I've said some doozies.
I think your fish-shaped doorknob was another one that kind of got to a weird place.
Anyway, off topic.
Leo is giving the sisters the scoop on Daisy and the Dark Lighter. And says that dark lighters seduce human women for procreation, and that is some messed up animal kingdom nonsense.
Ew, ew, ugh. Ew. That is gross.
No, thank you. But we learn that Daisy is a future white lighter, and that the vacation is canceled. Wrong.
This is You Must Be Myth Taken, the segment of the show where we talk about the wild inaccuracies and misrepresented figures, features, and creatures in mythology. I want to talk about white lighters and dark lighters. These two words are inventions of the Charmed universe, and we've talked about how white lighter is kind of dumb already. But white lighters are clearly based on the concept of guardian angels. Now, angels exist in many religions, but our Western view of them is primarily formed by Judaism and Christianity. And that's where we're going to focus this discussion.
So in Judaism, angels were the tools of God, God's messengers, servants, basically errand boys. No free will of their own. And in some interpretations, angels were just like extensions of God's body. Basically, he just used them to interact with humans, and they were like super freaky looking. Like, we have the story in the Bible where Gabriel goes to Mary and he says, "Be not afraid," but he's basically just all wings and eyeballs, so probably going to be a little bit afraid.
Oh my God, is that how God got Mary pregnant? Is one of the angels his penis?
Phoenix.
Ooh.
Phoenix said something horrific.
Maybe that's why it cut out. I was not meant to hear whatever it was. I mean, to be fair, as a former Catholic, you could probably interpret it that way, but...
So God's penis was just all fire and wings and eyeballs. Great.
Hot.
Yeah, that's basically where we're at.
And I thought it was bad for cats. The concept of guardian angels does appear in the Old Testament. In the Bible, angels appear to guard and guide key characters such as Lot and Moses. But the idea was that these angels were specifically appointed by God for that particular person, not that, like, everyone had a guardian angel. However, in later Judaism, Jewish theologians such as Rabbi Leo Trepp or, like, the entire Chabad Hasidic dynasty would espouse the idea that every human did indeed have a personal guardian angel, or at least a really big angel that was guarding all of humankind. However, I did ask one of my Jewish friends about this, and she said that there's really no, like, widespread mainstream belief in guardian angels among Judaism. It's really just, like, the biblical, like, hairy eyeballs that we're talking about.
Yeah, eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
So Christian understandings of angels were derived from Judaism, but then evolved a little bit as time went on. So the evolution of ideas about what an angel is happened among historical theologians and not within the actual text of the Bible itself. The Bible's angels appear as characters, but it doesn't really specify what they are.
A lot of the ideas that led to our current conception of angels didn't really begin to originate until like 400 Common Era and beyond. Around that time, some guy named Augustine of Hippo, I don't know if he was like Augustine of the Hippos or if he like was a hippo, unclear, but this like hippopotamus guy said that angel is a job, not a race, and that all angels were spirits who served the function of being an angel. This idea kind of eased the separation between humans and angels, and that's important to the story. So at the same time, other theologians were debating whether or not angels had physical bodies. So then we're gonna like zoom forward like several hundred years. In the 1600s, we have this guy, Emanuel Swedenborg, I think, who was like a Christian scientist and mystic.
He sounds like a Marvel villain.
He really does.
His ideas became very popular, and he influenced a lot of the new sects of Christianity that were forming. Swedenborg and his followers believed that angels existed in human form with spiritual bodies. I don't even really know what that means. But, and that all angels were spirits of humans who had lived and then died. So this is a huge deviation from the like original Jewish like biblical interpretation of angels. Like, we're no longer talking about like body parts of God, whatever body parts they may be.
The dick.
Shut up, Phoenix. Shut up about God's dick, Phoenix. You're going to hell.
I know.
But so now suddenly, yeah. So suddenly we're talking about angels being people who used to be alive and were now dead.
So ghosts.
So ghosts.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, angels are ghosts. So Swedenborg also had this idea that each human alive was accompanied by two angels and two evil spirits or demons or whatever, all four of whom were influencing that person and warring over their soul. But I mean, that literally leads to that like angel and devil on the shoulder archetype from old cartoons, and probably also the idea that white lighters need to be balanced by dark lighters.
So angels do typically elicit a certain religious perception. But as we mentioned before, they are not at all exclusively Judeo-Christian beings. That just happens to be where they're most prevalent. There are scores of high-frequency beings that could be classified as angels. I know plenty of witches who incorporate working with angels in their practice, as well as many who avoid it altogether because of the idea that they're solely Christian figures. The same can be said for the antithesis of angels, demons. These beings, from my personal perspective, are just beings of high and low frequency, meaning like the direction that they go after they leave source, whether they serve a higher purpose or a lower one, influence order or chaos, so on and so forth. But they each serve their own unique purpose in their own perspective corners. Also, Christian conservatives are always like, God only created two genders! But angels are never explicitly given a gender in the Bible.
So, I'm non-binary, and I'm obviously an angel.
No.
Anyway, all of this gets us to angels in pop culture like Leo, who were once humans who died and are now guardians of humans. Wasn't that fun? All those thousands of years of theology that created Leo.
I definitely get, like, obviously the comparison between white lighters and guardian angels, but I can't get out of my head that white lighters are really just born again virgins.
Oh my God. Dick. That's That's amazing.
I can't remember what episode I was watching, but I'm like, man, I bet Leo's a virgin. But then I remembered that he'd been married before, so probably not. But all things considered, that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
So Piper took his second virginity.
Sure did.
Is that like when I had oral sex for the first time and then had anal sex for the first time? Like two different... two different first times?
That's exactly what it's like, 100%.
I'll tell you what, they were vastly different experiences for me. This is a super fun story about angels and healing. I could not include this, you guys. Like, you'll see why. One of the earliest instances of angels having healing powers is in the delightful Book of Tobit, which is an apocryphal biblical text. If you don't know, apocrypha refers to books that were originally in the Bible or written around the same time and everything, and then were like cut out by this council of people who were basically like, this doesn't belong in the Bible. Tobit is this guy who went blind because birds shat in his eyes. His son Tobias goes off in the world to do whatever. He's on like Rumspringa or whatever. And he meets the archangel Raphael. Raphael tells him to marry a woman named Sarah, who is cursed by the demon Asmodeus. Sarah is straight up not having a good time, you guys. Sarah has been married 7 times, and Asmodeus keeps killing her husband before they can consummate the marriage. Oh my god, Sarah.
Ultimate cock block.
Yeah, seriously. But Tobias and Sarah get married, and Sarah finally gets dicked down. Finally.
I mean, you can relate to that.
Okay.
Right. Now I see why you put this story in here. You read it and you were like, oh my god, same sis, yes.
Oh my god, that is the most tame part of this story, okay? So Tobias and Sarah are fucking. And while that's going on, Raphael totally smacks down Asmodeus. And then Raphael gets Tobias to go and see his blind dad and heals him by putting fish guts on his face.
Kinky.
Ugh.
No, this is no good. I'm sure that, I'm sorry, you're gonna get sepsis or something.
So many infections happening in the Bible.
Yeah, basically. like, for sure.
Nothing in the Bible actually happened. Everyone just had syphilis and was crazy.
That tracks. Or they caught, like, some kind of fish face parasite. I don't know why they left that story out of the Bible, you guys. Because...
I mean, to be fair, like, it's not that much worse than some stories that got in, so...
I don't know. I think my favorite Bible story was always David and Goliath. There was just something about a boy conquering a daddy that I really enjoyed. At the police station, Andy and Daryl are tense because internal affairs is all over their asses. And Daryl doesn't know why, but Prue calls Andy, and Andy pretends that it's not her and agrees to meet up with her. He pretends to talk to someone named Franklin, who is... not there, and Daryl's like, you lying son of a bitch. And they get up and they have this really tense moment where they're looking into each other's eyes, and the first thing I thought about was kiss.
I would have loved that.
Yeah, between like Daryl and Andy all the time, I'm always just waiting for them to make out just once.
I ship it.
Yeah.
Is Daryl super hot in lavender? Yes. Because yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
Oh my god.
At Quake, Andy tells Prue that Internal Affairs is investigating his supernatural cases that she's involved in. And Prue is like, wow, this kind of feels like my fault. And we're all kind of like, yeah, that's because it is. Take some responsibility for your actions, Prue.
I don't think it's her fault. She tried to gaslight girl boss gatekeep him away, like, for months, and he just wouldn't back off.
Okay, blame the straight white man. Haven't they suffered enough?
No means no, Andy. Stop trying to investigate her dark secret.
Andy's being dumb and decides to help Prue, even though that's a really poor idea for him right now, and decides to help her find where Daisy is staying.
Leo and Phoebe are talking about Piper. There's this... line that Phoebe says that I think is really funny. It's not every day you find out the guy you're seeing isn't human, though in Piper's case.
It's every day.
Every yeah. single day of her life.
Every, like, literally every day. Yeah, so then Phoebe says that Andy and Prue are on their way to Daisy's hotel. Leo says white lighters can't heal themselves. Plot device, mega lame. Like, how fucking useless. Leo says he's gonna die because dark lighter poison can't be reversed. It's designed to kill white lighters.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, since Leah was dying, Daisy is no longer hidden from Alec, and that's, like, super inconvenient.
So they're really upset about how Leah was dying, obviously. And as they're talking about Piper, Leah was very upset that he did not tell Piper his secret, and he says this line, "Being with her broke the rules, but not being with her breaks my heart. And pass me a fucking bucket." That is...
Leo should be writing taglines for romance movies.
Honestly, I don't know where I ever could have gotten the idea that a relationship has to be a struggle and be in turmoil to be special and valuable. I don't know where that could have gotten ingrained into my mind. Not a clue. Where could that have happened? At what point in my life would I have learned that relationships are hard?
This is very, like, star-crossed lovers kind of thing.
Yeah, I really love, like, the arc of Leo and Piper's relationship. I think, I actually do think it's really well done, even though when, like, you're binge-watching the show, there's a lot of, like, emotional whiplash, because a lot of times the story seems to be, like, spinning their wheels, because their problem is always the same, and they just kind of keep hitting a wall with it. But ultimately, I really like the progression of their relationship. I think it's the best romance in the show, and, like, unless we're counting all the intense moments between Andy and Daryl, which we probably should. But yes.
Second best.
I suppose then in this case, Leo and Piper is the best canon romance, whereas Andy and Daryl would be the best fan fiction one, because we just never got the make out.
They forgot to make out.
Madge, you're pretty good at fan fiction. Do you want to, like, spin us right now, story?
Listen, it takes an outline. I gotta watch all of their moments together to get in the mood, and then I can write you a fan fiction. Maybe I'll write you guys one just for the two of you specifically.
If you write an Andy/Daryl fanfic, we will read it.
We will read it on the air. Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Well, it's gonna then have to be the best thing I've ever written. So you're gonna have to give me a little time.
Listen, my favorite Andy and Daryl moment is in The Dream Sorcerer when Andy is banging on that glass.
Oh yeah.
And how I wish it was Daryl's ass. That's the fan fiction I want.
Yeah. All right. Jot that down, man.
I'm putting it on the to-do list.
So Piper's flipping through the Book of Shadows, but it's useless as usual. Phoebe comes up and tells her Leo's gonna die, so deal with that, sis. But Piper gets to be, like, kind of a hard ass in this episode, and I love it. I love this line. I love the way she says it. She says, "We have to save him, whether we're meant to or not. Fuck destiny. I'm gonna save my boyfriend and fuck him again.
There's a loose floorboard in my bedroom, and I really need him to fix it, but I don't want to pay, so I'm gonna pay in crab."
Oh god, not the crab thing again.
Daisy is staying in a pretty cheap hotel, and she comes home and sees some flowers, and then Alec appears. And this scene is very scary. She's trapped in this hotel room with him. She's visibly uncomfortable. And he talks about when they were together. Daisy throws the flowers at him and tells him that he sucks. But Daisy has some really bad aim, because those flowers missed, like, big time.
Well, at least she tried. I didn't think she was throwing them at him. I just thought she, like, threw them to, like, break them.
That's kind of what I thought. She just kind of snapped a little bit, and she just had to break something.
Oh, well, wasted opportunity.
Fair, like, yeah.
Alec says that they're going to be together, and he fucked Leo up. He won that pissing contest. Yes, with his big crossbow.
With his big penetrating arrow.
I love phallic imagery. Oh.
Katie, will you write us an Alec times Leo fanfiction?
I mean, that would actually be very interesting, because it's like that, you know, like, they're, and it's enemy lovers.
Talk about forbidden love.
Every time Alec spanks Leo, it just lives a little bit of skin cancer on. Like,
the hotel manager comes in to investigate the noise. He is Asian, and so therefore he gets promptly murdered after saying two lines. While this is going on, this part's actually really horrible. It kind of, like, it's an echo of that fear that we talked about earlier, that, like, if you don't isolate yourself, then your abuser will, like, hurt someone else, you know? It's very that. And, like, Daisy just has to, like, watch it happen. Her reaction to watching it happen is pretty gut-wrenching, but she has the presence of mind to escape out the window while this is going on. Prue and Andy bust in right after, and Prue throws Alec into a wall, like, no hesitation. She's like, fuck you, but she don't even know who he is. She's like, fuck you.
Yes, Prue, fling that bastard like a booger.
Basically.
Right across the room.
But Alec orbs away, and his orbs are, like, black purple, which I think looks a lot cooler than blue white. So I guess Alec has, nope, I'm not gonna make that joke.
Oh my god.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you prefer black balls to blue balls.
I do.
I would like to provide Madge this space to speak here, if she would like to give her opinion on this scene.
Oh, yes, I actually would. Thank you. Oh, God, it's so good. It's so creepy. And I just, this whole episode, every time Alec is with Daisy and he does that face touch, like he's constantly touching her face. And I have like a visceral reaction to it because it's like, it's so like surface level. It looks really like a tender, like stroking her face, but it's so menacing and so, there's just something so gross about it. And I can't even really articulate what it is. Like I said, like I just get this like gut feeling when I watch it and I put, ugh. It gives me like chills. I think this whole scene is so well done. And like Siren had mentioned earlier about how we see in this scene, like a, kind of like a voice given to Daisy's fear of Alec and like the need to isolate herself because like she watches him kill someone who like gets in the way of their relationship. And like this will, this definitely happens in real life. And even if the threat isn't always carried out, like this is something abusers definitely do. They will threaten the people you love or just like literally anyone. Like this character, for example, is just like a random hotel manager, but he gets in the way and Alec just kind of uses him as like a throwaway thing. And obviously this is going to hurt Daisy to like see what he could, to, and she's going to blame herself for this man's death. And it's also going to speak further to her fear of Alec because like this is what he could do to her too. So she sees that in action and she sees how this relationship she had with somebody that she did love, what it like just does to everyone. And it's like how her love for someone became this big angry thing now. There's a lot to like that goes into that scene that I just think really again speaks to the realities, even though of course this is like a supernatural case. But it definitely packs a punch, I think, for anyone who has a history with these sorts of relationships. It's a hard one to watch, but I think they handle it with a lot of care. And that's something you really don't see a lot. And that's part of the reason why I love this episode so much as a whole, is that they handle it like that all the time. And this part, not so much, but like the trajectory of this story overall is really cathartic to watch, even in these difficult moments.
Yeah, I agree that I think that the subject matter is handled very responsibly and in such a way where there aren't so many moments that are so explicitly... The moment that comes to mind when we're talking about this thematically is at the end when he says the line to her about being the last man she'll ever leave. That, to me, is like the most intense part of the episode. This part is menacing and scary, but it's still palatable to the viewer because it's this supernatural situation. Whereas I feel like towards the end, what's happening is a little bit more real.
Yeah, I would agree with that because like at the like right now, it's definitely like the buildup to the last burst of violence. And at the end, you're right, it is more. There's more of a realism to it. It's just very physical. And he's not really using his powers against Daisy at that point. It really is just like hand to hand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it hits closer, I think, at the end. They have like the build up to, again, like the final step of violence. And I think it is really interesting how they chose to like write that.
So I think this scene kind of exists to like display his power and what it does. So like, I mean, otherwise, like this is the only person that he kills on screen. He can't kill Leo or one of the sisters or Daisy. So like they had to basically invent this throwaway character to display the death touch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why this exists. But it's gross and unfortunate that we have to like watch the scene where this like innocent bystander dies for like getting in the way of the abuse. But like, I think that's like the overall purpose was to show the power. But in doing so, they, you know, actually created a really realistic, scary situation.
That's true.
And again, I just, as much as I love Crossbows, I feel like this touch of death thing is so much more menacing than what Darklighters become later. I feel like even the Darklighter that we meet, believe it's next season, maybe it's in season 3, is a little bit more intimidating because it's not just like, I'm gonna shoot you with an arrow. I like the more psychological effect that these Darklighters are having in terms of like entertainment value and story.
Yeah, I think the thing, like, with the, like, the crossbows and, like, weapons like that, I feel like it's never as, like, good to watch because they're, like, all you do with, like, a crossbow or, like, a weapon like a gun, you shoot it. And, like, there's no real, like, combat to that. So, like, watching that, like, for entertainment, like, it's not as, there's not much, like, artistry to that when you're watching it in, like, a fight scene. It's just, like, one shot. And that's it. So it's not as like tense as the Death Touch because that involves just more physicality.
I think the crossbow is kind of like an interesting piece of iconography, though. Like, how many modern day TV shows do you know that regularly feature crossbows? It's kind of interesting. It's a projectile weapon that's not a gun because a gun would feel too human. The crossbow's more medieval, makes it feel archaic or strange. And like you mentioned earlier, like sometimes the difference between a demon and a warlock and a darklighter and whatever the hell is going on is like, what? But as soon as you see the crossbow, you know you're dealing
That's
with
true.
A dark.
It's like their aesthetic.
Yes. Yes. Crossbow aesthetic.
I mean, darklighters definitely, I mean, a crossbow is definitely a more ye olde time weapon until it starts looking like they got them straight out of a Cabela's. Like... later when it's just they look very modern and I sort of wish that they did not.
So at the manor, Piper is preparing to cast the power switching spell to switch her powers with Leo's so she can heal him, and her sisters at first don't want her to, but then they agree to it, so Piper does the spell.
This is Misspelled, the part of the show where we critique the spells used by fantasy witches and talk about how a real witch might do the same thing. So there really isn't a real world equivalent to this spell because it's pretty much like body switching. However, this spell does fall under the category of transference magic, which is a kind of spell where you send a certain type of energy into something else. So this might, some people might refer to this as programming a spell or a magical item. This is most commonly done with unwanted emotions like sadness, grief, anger, anxiety, and so on, but could be anything. A charm or a spell bag or a witch's bottle could also fall into this category. An example of this is one of the first spells that I ever learned, which was to banish outsiders, a spell that incorporates the water and earth elements. You gather up some stones, visualize your unwanted emotions or energy going into them, and then throw them as hard as you can into a body of water. Or, if you're really pissed off, at someone else. Misspelled.
So after the spell, Piper can't freeze. So it seems to have worked. But then Prue has a premonition of Kit and a lamp breaking, which pisses Phoebe off, because she really liked that lamp. And so she then breaks the lamp when she tries to stop Kit from breaking it. So anyway, end of the day, the spell switched all their powers, not just Piper and Leo's, but Phoebe and Prue's as well. And Phoebe calls it supernatural Freaky Friday, as if Freaky Friday is not already supernatural.
Right?
Phoebe's just saying a lot of... Phoebe's just saying a lot of things in this episode that irk me, I guess.
Phoebe has no fucking idea what she's talking about.
But then, yeah, so Phoebe makes her little sarcastic comment and then goes to answer the phone that is ringing downstairs and lets them sort out the problem.
Piper doesn't know how to use Leo's powers, but Andy just called to say that Daisy bought a bus ticket. But Piper is refusing to undo the spell because she doesn't understand how Leo's powers work, and she's really adamant on saving her boy toy. Phoebe and Prue take off to find Daisy using each other's powers.
Then Andy has another meeting with internal affairs. Inspector Rodriguez is all pissy about Andy stumbling onto the dead body. This is a continuity error that I found myself, you guys. It's not even on IMDb. If I were more of a loser, I would log in and put it on there, but I'm not going to. Internal Affairs says that the murder happened at the Motel Capri, but before the scene, you see a shot of a building that says Senator's Hotel.
Oh.
Yeah. They have no idea where the fuck they are. Anyway, Andy says he got an anonymous tip that made him show up to find the dead body 2 seconds after it died. I think that's code for Andy's a murderer. But Rodriguez knows he was with an attractive woman. He makes sure to call her attractive.
To cover up the fact that he's gay.
Yeah, dude, I would love it if he was gay. He can be gay right over here all day. Or also with Andy and Daryl. Madge, taking notes?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Okay, so Andy / Daryl / Alec the Darklighter / Inspector Rodriguez.
I can make that work.
Actually, could you just throw in Neighbor Dan just for me?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the one who looks like a Ken doll.
Oh, and one of his, like, gray tank tops. Anyway.
He'll just be standing there the whole time.
Perfect.
Just, yeah.
Jerking it in the corner.
That's what I would do in that situation. Yeah. There'd be so much going on. I wouldn't know what to do. So Rodriguez wants to know who this woman Andy was with is. I think because he's jealous. Because the next thing, Rodriguez leans in real close and says, "You have no idea how much I can hurt you," while gazing longingly at Andy's neck. It's intimate. And I'm turned on. And Kinky Andy turns in his gun and badge and leaves. So I guess ghosted.
Oh, at the bus station, Alec is being everybody at the same time and stalking Daisy, which is making her lose her fucking mind, which absolutely understandable in the situation.
Yeah, that's unnerving. So that's not a power that, like, Darklighters ever have again, or really anybody does. But I don't even care about that part, really, because it's just like he's literally everywhere. And I don't you feel like that's how victims of these kinds of relationships can feel? Like, they're everywhere you go.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, how I thought of it. And just, because sometimes, like, I know, like, in my experience, like, I would, like, occasionally see someone who kind of looked like my ex, and I would have a panic attack. Like, so this scene, like, though, like, it was pretty short, really, again, really hit close, because that is the feeling. It's just you're kind of like surrounded by this situation and this person at all times.
Yeah, like, you can't escape him. He's everywhere you go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Prue is trying to piss off Phoebe so that she'll be telekinetic. And Prue brings up Phoebe's high school nickname. And she just demolishes a magazine rack.
What was it? Oh, yeah. Freebie.
I know that joke is like so like slut shamey, but it made me laugh really hard. Like, I was a bad feminist in that moment, but it was so funny.
I think it's hilarious. I have the sense of humor of a fifth grade playground bully. Okay. I think Freebie is hilarious.
It's so funny.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's not the last time that we'll hear that either.
They bring it up again in season 6.
Which is really good continuity for them.
It so is. Yeah, for sure.
Phoebe wants Prue to get a premonition, and she doesn't want to because it's a useless fucking power, and everyone knows that.
No, because it sucks, because getting premonitions suck. Fucking hurts and shit.
Apparently.
Didn't, like, Prue, like, fully said, she said that this is useless. Like, damn. Way to really get at Phoebe's power.
Okay, so Prue gets a premonition of Daisy in the bathroom, which is weird. But at least it leads them to where they're supposed to be. Oh, I don't know if the powers that be have heard about this, but you're not allowed to put cameras in a bathroom.
Yeah, Prue's had this power for all of 20 minutes and she's peeping on the women's room. Creepy.
Yeah, and Phoebe was the queer-coded one in The Fourth Sister. That's believable.
Yeah, so Daisy's in the women's room trying to tell herself that she has this under control and she's going to be okay, which, again, it's sad and relatable. I mean, how many of us have lived that exact moment? But then Alec comes in to attack her, of course. He does this really weird thing. This is what, probably the most cartoonish villain thing he does. He puts his one leg up on the counter.
You're talking about the high kick?
It is like a high kick. And then he just like holds it there. It's like super awkward. What is he doing?
I know he's trying to like physically box her in, so it's like, so the concept behind it is not funny, but like the action of him doing this like cheerleader kick,
it's like very gay to me. Like I feel like they're about to start singing and do a tango. Really, like was. That's what it is to me.
He's fully about to start tap dancing, like a little tap solo right there, like it's Singing in the Rain.
It's not really menacing. It's not really sexy or romantic either. It fails entirely. I mean, like, even if someone I liked did that to me, I would be like, I realize that your dick is right there, but you look ridiculous.
I feel like it would make me like them a little bit less.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it doesn't take much, do it.
No, that's fair. It really doesn't.
Yeah, but then, okay, so then he says this thing. He tells Daisy that it's her fault that he kills people. That is classic abuser. Like, everything is the victim's fault from the perspective of the abuser. Every awful thing they do, they blame on their victim. But then Daisy has this nice moment where she kicks him in the balls.
I loved that. Oh,
good for her. I love it, too. I just wish that she had, like, run away in that moment.
Yeah.
Not that there was, like, much of a moment, but still.
Because I had the same thought. But then, like, when I rewatched the episode again today, I was like, well, I guess there wasn't even... She kicks him, he goes down, but there's not really a lot of room for her to navigate.
There's not. I just wish it was that way, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So he responds to this by choking her. Like, now it's serious. Thankfully, Prue and Phoebe burst in. And Alex draws his crossbow, which makes Phoebe turn on all the faucets and spill soap everywhere. She is super good at telekinesis.
She is really crushing it at the telekinetic game. Prue admits to banging up Graham's car when they were teenagers, and Phoebe got blamed for it. And this pisses Phoebe off so much that she throws Alec into the bathroom stall. She's like, I got grounded for that, Prue.
I think that part is super funny. And that's what I mean about this episode, like, balancing out all these different emotions. So, like, the scene that we just watched between Alec and Daisy is horrific. And then the charmed ones come in and somehow make it funny.
Yeah. And then, but then later in the show, I feel like they start to do that too much, where, like, something serious is happening and then there's, like, a gimmick that doesn't quite land, or... the problem is over too easily. And that's not happening in this episode, which I really like a lot.
Yeah, I think they strike like a perfect balance here. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out, like, Phoebe threw him hard through that door, because if you look at the bathroom door after it's like unhinged behind him, it is like fully bent.
Damn.
So yeah, she was super mad about getting grounded 15 years ago.
She holds on to a lot of unexpressed rage. As opposed to Prue, who just lets it out on people all the time.
Well, and you know what we learned from Stephen King's Carrie is that the best way to express your rage is through telekinesis.
I think it does a really good job. Like, this whole thing between Alec and Daisy, every time they have a scene together, they do a really great job of, like, progressing the violence. Because you had the first scene with them in the motel, and he is doing all the creepy face touching, and then... and he's trying to appeal to her at that time in a romantic kind of tender way, whereas now he's losing his patience with her and he's getting angrier. He's putting blame on her. He's physically choking her in this scene. So you can see his like whole facade of like being the good guy who really just is doing all this because he loves her. And now he's starting, like, the cracks are showing and he's starting to get angry with her. And that anger is manifesting in the physical violence towards her. So the way that this is paced out in the episode is very realistic in the like escalation of the abuser's violence. So again, like, this is really just kind of an extension of the motel scene, and it's done just I again, very upsetting to watch, but I mean, that is part of the point. And I just think it's, I don't know, I feel very like well respected, I suppose, by this episode, by the way they choose, like, just how, like, once again, authentically everything is done. It's done with such thought and care, and even when it's very upsetting to watch, it's done so in a way that I think speaks to our experience. So you kind of feel like, listen, I like, as a survivor of abuse, like I feel listened to by this episode.
I'm really glad that it is something that provides catharsis in that way.
Absolutely.
Rather than just being something that's like trigger after trigger after trigger, which I feel like is really commendable for the show's writers and for the performances of the actors. I know that I gave them a hard time at the beginning, but I think that that speaks to what is happening here, because it's really easy to go for shock value.
Yes.
At seeing Red in season 6 of Buffy. It's good to know, like, from someone who can relate to this, that that's not what's happening here.
Yeah, they really, I like you bringing up, like, the shock value thing, because that does not happen in this episode, and that happens so often in, like, storylines about, like, abuse and, like, intimate partner violence, where they will go for something really dramatic. I don't know. It's just, it's careless when they do that. And that just does not happen in this episode at all.
This might be kind of hard for me to talk about, but I guess I want to know if you agree with this, Madge. When awful events, especially, like, violence between people, are portrayed in media and it's done authentically, and it authentically shows the horror of a situation, you know that the people watching it are actually grasping the horror that you've endured, when sometimes you feel like your words can't adequately describe it. That is kind of validating.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's definitely what I meant when I said, like, I feel listened to by this episode. Like, I feel understood in a way that I can't always express.
So there are absolutely horrible things on some, like, TV shows and movies that are very triggering for me to watch. But at the same time, if it's done well, and especially if the piece of media gives the victim the space to, like, process what's happened, not even necessarily get revenge, although I do love it when it ends that way, but just process, then I feel, I guess, yeah, understood and listened to by that, even when it's awful.
Yeah. Well, because, and like take this episode for example, like, Alec's treatment of Daisy is portrayed as a bad thing. It's not filmed through a lens of, like, oh, this is so romantic or anything like that. Like, he's fully the bad guy 100%. So it definitely gives you the space to process, like, things that have that may have happened to you, and in a way where you come out of, like, watching this episode and maybe, like, examining it and like realizing, like, if you're rooting for Daisy and you know that none of Alec's behavior is her fault, then you can apply that to your own situation as well, and it can, again,
yeah
so it definitely does provide that space for you and, like, a chance to forgive yourself, because I feel like that is definitely part of the healing process for a lot of abuse survivors. Is that you have to let go of any, like, blame that you felt because of what they did. So, yeah, it gives you, like, it's a safe space to explore that. And even if it, once again, like, even when it is triggering, like, it's cathartic, really, is the word of the day.
Yeah, it really is. So I guess maybe the point I'm trying to make is that, like, sometimes violence in media can serve a higher purpose by, like, making the audience see that it's wrong.
Yeah, I think so. It's just, but it's definitely a tricky theme to navigate, and I think that's why sometimes we see it done really carelessly or incorrectly. But at least, hey, we got, like, in this case, it's done well. So
I really do think it's done well in this episode, which is one of the reasons this episode is my favorite, because it handles a serious situation so well while being funny. And that's, I mean, that's kind of, isn't that kind of life for people like us? To, like, find the humor in, like, horrible things that we've endured?
I mean, yeah, I mean... I'm sure there's,
like, thinking about how your ex is, like, such an idiot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah, exactly. Like, I have nothing intelligent to say. I'm just agreeing because that's all I got.
Agreeing with me is an intelligent thing to say. Take notes, Phoenix. That's true.
Speak for your fucking self. So, Prue grabs the crossbow, but Alec dark orbs away just before Prue can shoot him as she's rocking her neon green dress and jean jacket. Just with that crossbow, it's quite the look.
It's quite the look. And do you know what I love about that is that she's wearing that neon green dress, a jean jacket, carrying a crossbow, and then she walks out of the bathroom with it into the crowded bus station lobby.
I mean, this was like pre-9/11, so I guess they...
You just walk around a bus station with a crossbow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's San Francisco. Who's going to notice? But still, like, it's very, like...
I had the same
thought. Energy as, like, Buffy Summers walking down the sidewalk holding a greatsword, you know?
Yeah. it's okay. We can show someone holding a weapon in a public space, but God forbid there's any gay people on our show.
Right. Yeah, so Piper just still cannot figure out how to heal Leo. So instead they have this tender conversation, and Leo tells her he loves her and that he's gonna die.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like, you're great. Peace out, girl.
I'm glad that when I die, I'm going to traumatize you.
So I don't want to blame the victim by any means, but I just feel that Daisy is very self-centered in this moment because she walks into another person's house and assumes that the flowers there are for her.
But there's a point to that, too, which is that memories from your abusers can twist gestures into having a different meaning for you. Nobody who ever gives Daisy flowers in the future will have the reaction from her that they want.
That is very true.
Flowers will always make her think of him. That's fucked up, and that's what they were saying. Because, well, I mean, the flowers are like a coded communication between Andy and Prue, so they're not really a romantic gesture either way. But, in theory, just Andy giving Prue flowers is a romantic gesture, and Daisy sees that and finds it triggering.
And while I see that point of view, and this is a very fresh situation for Daisy, so I get it, but also... at a certain point, your triggers become your own responsibility.
Well, I mean, I somewhat agree with that to an extent. But, I mean, it's pretty fresh, Phoenix.
Well, that's what I said. It's a fresh situation. But yes, there are flowers on the table, but they're a message for Prue. And Prue takes off to meet with her ex before really fixing anything. The whole reason Prue went to see Andy in the first place was to find Daisy. And now she's done that. And before completing... the problem, she's taking off to go see Andy again.
Right, but then Phoebe's like, it's okay, Prue, go ahead and do it. You're the one who's useless now. You know, I didn't really think about this until now, but, like, Phoebe is, like, such a badass right now, if she could control her telekinesis. Because, unlike Prue, she can move things with her mind and do martial arts.
Oh, yeah.
So, like... don't fuck with that bitch.
Exactly. But eventually, Prue learns how to do martial arts, too.
Yeah, just without all the studying like Phoebe did.
Yeah.
Prue takes off to meet with her ex because it's not like anything is really going on at the house. And then Phoebe and Daisy go upstairs to see that Leo is dead. And Piper is super upset about
it. And, like, props to Holly Marie Combs acting in that because she is, like, cowering on the floor. And just viscerally upset.
That's a great, like, cry on cue. Like, I think this happens a little bit later when she's talking to Phoebe and she's, like, crying. I don't know. I just imagine that someone said something to hurt Holly Marie Combs' feelings to get that reaction. Because her whole reaction and dealing with Leo's death is very, very, like, well acted.
Dude, she's good. I love them all, but I think Holly is the best.
Yeah.
I think she's such an amazing actress. Mm-hmm. So underrated.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So Daisy wants to bail because Leo is dead and she doesn't want Alec to kill the charmed one. So this goes back to what we were talking about before, where she's like blaming herself, feeling like anyone around her is going to be hurt. So she wants to take off, but Piper lays down a guilt trip and says that Leo died to bring her here. So like, bitch, you're not going anywhere. You're not leaving. Stay. Sit down. We got you.
This is another moment for me of Piper, like, being a hard ass.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, she could have gone the route of being so upset about Leo's death that she blamed Daisy for it and just was like, fuck that bitch, I'm not doing this anymore. But instead, she's like, no, I will carry on his mission. I will protect you, you dumb slut, so sit the fuck down. I think Piper's a hard ass in this whole fucking episode. I think that she is like both strong and vulnerable, and it's back and forth, and it all makes sense. It's really good.
Yeah. Andy's flowers get Prue to a secondary location that definitely looks like the Zodiac Killer would murder you there. I know it's supposed to be.
Wow.
I know it's supposed to be like scenic, and Prue makes the comment about how they used to hook up there in high school, but I'm like, I am so surprised you guys did not end up as like a true crime documentary, because that, maybe I just listened to too many murder podcasts, but I'm like, that is a full on murder bench.
Your skin's gonna get made into a suit, girl. You need to get out of there.
I thought that it was scenic until 60 seconds
not
ago
anymore.
And now I don't know. I am never going to a public park again.
Neither am I. So, I mean, nothing murdery actually happens. And Andy just tells Prue that he's not a cop anymore because good cops quit.
Ayo! Oh my god.
So Andy is turning his badge and gun, and he tells Prue she needs to be careful because Rodriguez might figure out the whole witchy thing. Talk more about the unsolved cases. I have to be honest, I was not that I'm not that interested or invested in Andy and Prue. So I was like, this is just
nobody really was.
Yeah. I was like, this is kind of just more of the same conversation they keep having.
Yeah, basically. They just gotta do it one more time until they do it three more times.
I read a fan fiction one time where Chris has to go back in time and sleep with all of the sisters' lovers. So that's, I mean, I was invested in that storyline.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need the link in the description, bitch.
I'll see if I can find it and I'll send it to you.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was the story I was invested in.
I'm already invested. I am super invested. I'm about to cut this podcast short. Like,
it's been 2 hours, but yeah, cut it short.
Where is this / fan fiction? Where? Yeah, so Piper's just kind of like staring at Leo's corpse, and she's mad about it. She feels like a failure because she can't heal, and it's all Leo's fault. Phoebe tries to be comforting, which she's super sucks at. Yeah, and then alone, Piper finally tells Leo's dead body that she loves him. And then she cries, again, on cue, it looks like, which activates the healing power, finally. And the healing power works on Leo, even though he's quote-unquote dead. Leo can't heal the dead. He says it all the time in the future, but apparently Piper can. Well, whatever. So then Leo says Piper had to figure out all on her own that love was the trigger. Like, she's fucking Glenda the Good or some bullshit. She had the answer all along. Mind games, basically.
Manipulative.
And, you know, Piper says she has issues being in love because it will hurt when Leo leaves, which, he will.
They go downstairs and Alex shows up and Phoebe attacks the chandelier. I'm gonna swing.
Any excuse to fucking sing.
And Alex somehow grabs Piper even though she was the furthest person from him, but I guess it matters for like symmetry. Alex threatens to kill her with his glowing red hand that looks like he is a cartoon that just touched something hot. And
right.
Prue comes home and just stands there while Alec grabs Daisy and orbs away with her.
I love how Prue is like, Phoebe, stop him. Actually do something. That's what I would do.
And then Phoebe just like lifts her hand up in the air and does nothing.
Yeah, basically. She's like, what if I assume the position for anal? Will that help?
Phoebe's like, I have a question.
Oh, okay. So, Piper tries to use Leo's power to sense where Daisy is. Leo can't take his power back because he's too weak or lazy to bother trying, even though he's fully healed, but whatever. Piper will just do it herself. And so she does figure out where Daisy and Alec are, and Phoebe says, fuck the power of three. We didn't need that bitch last episode either. So instead of orbing to where Daisy is, they're going to drive to the murderous ex-boyfriend because they got time.
Alex has taken Daisy to Golden Gate Park, which is where pretty much everything goes down for a while for some reason.
It really does. They love to almost kill people there.
So it looks all ritual sacrifice-y, and Alex has this line.
You're the only woman I've ever loved, Daisy. And now I'm the last man that you'll ever leave.
It's a good line, but it's gross. We hate it.
Yeah, we like love hate it. Sort of like the Dream Sorcerer lines that were really horrible, but like well written, you know?
Yeah, very
There's
that.
A little bit of that going on with him, but actually it's very that.
Once again, speaking to that dialogue. Yeah, this episode does remind me of the Dream Sorcerer one.
It is. I didn't put it together till just now, but yeah, it really is.
Prue and Phoebe show up just in the nick of time somehow, even though they drove there and he fucking teleported, so...
Well, he teleported, but then he, like, made her walk for a while to give them time to catch up, you know? Yeah. Luckily, the Charmed Ones live within a 2-minute drive of all of San Francisco.
Yeah, but when they're in the same room with someone, they cannot catch up to them. Somehow... the sight of Alec pisses Phoebe off just enough to fuck him up, and Prue casts a power switching spell with to take Alec's touch of death. And Prue easily discovers that hate triggers her new power. It's a familiar emotion for her.
Correct.
She feels it for her sister all the time. I'm surprised she didn't just like slap Phoebe in the face right there.
I'm surprised she doesn't just slap Phoebe in the face a lot.
Once an episode, right. At least.
So Phoebe telekinetically slides Alec over to Prue, where she can kill him slowly with his own power, recasting the power switching spell, except she doesn't actually finish the whole thing.
Yeah.
Did anyone else notice that?
Yeah.
She doesn't.
Yeah, I was waiting for it to be like, her to be like, oh no, I didn't finish the spell.
Whoops.
He's gone.
And that's what made me think, what would have happened if the premonition power died with Alec? So, like, then do they just switch powers back, and instead of seeing the future, Phoebe now has the hateful touch of death? Because, cool.
I mean, I would watch that.
Yeah, that would be the shit. Flaunt your fucking power at me again, Prue. Do it. So, when Prue's casting the spell to switch powers with Alec, Phoebe covers her ears with her hands.
Yeah.
Why
is she too?
So like if she can't hear the spell, it won't work on her? Really?
I guess. I don't know if that's how magic is supposed to work.
It looks very silly to me. It's very like childlike, I guess. I don't know. It's so unserious.
I think they just wanted to like provide some kind of visual, like this is why Phoebe and Prue's powers don't switch again. Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't work on us because we're questioning it anyway, but good try.
I know, it wasn't good.
I do remember seeing in one representation that I watched, I don't remember what movie or show it was, but that you have to...
I already know what you're gonna say, and I know what it is.
What is it?
It's Gargoyles.
Oh, it is Gargoyles. I love Gargoyles.
For magic to work on you, you have to see it and hear it, which is why that blind guy didn't turn to stone when Damona was turning the whole city into statues so she could kill a bunch of innocent people. Damona's so cool.
You kind of are Damona, Siren.
Okay, that is the sweetest thing anyone has ever said to me. I love that bitch.
Gargoyles is one of my favorite cartoons.
That show was the fucking shit, and it was way advanced for kids. I love that
show. I love it more now than I did when I was younger. I don't know why that happened, but I'm pretty sure that's the reason.
I'm pretty sure that we also just planted the seeds of becoming a Gargoyles podcast.
I was about to ask, is this now a can't say the word. Forget it.
Gorgals! Sackics! Dorksided!
I would absolutely talk about gargoyles on this show. Yes, I would. So, Madge, what are Piper and Leo doing right now?
Oh my god, they're cuddling and being really annoyingly adorable. So we do cut afterwards to Piper and Leo cuddling and talking about how he used to be human. He was a medic in World War II, which kind of then goes forth to speak to his afterlife as a white lighter. And he says he can choose to be human again to be with her, but Piper is like, whoa, too fast, too serious.
Right? She's like, listen, we just got back together. And also, if we resolve the drama now, what are we going to do for season 2?
So she ultimately says that she can't ask him to do that. And Leo's like, girl, you right. And then they have a kiss goodbye. That this scene actually makes me really emotional. And then after they have that conversation and he leaves. Because again, I think I said earlier, I do like the trajectory of their relationship a lot. I think there's just something kind of tragic about it, just because like here's two people who really should be able to be together because they both even have like the same purpose in life. But that's the exact thing that like keeps them apart, because at the end of the day, I think the big question is, if they had to choose in any situation, would they choose to save their innocent or would they choose to save each other? So these, you know, I know it's a little hokey and cheesy and everything, but their relationship really gets to me. So
I don't disagree with any of that. Mm-hmm. I love the Piper and Leo relationship. I feel like it hits the same notes over and over again without getting boring. It's just like, it's an entire story arc of that literal, like, star-crossed lovers. But with a lot of that, you just get so tired of it. Like, either be together or don't. Like, make up your fucking mind, you know? But for Piper and Leo, it's like, they're always trying to be together, yeah, and something is always getting in the way, and they're always navigating that, but it's never stale.
Mm-hmm. Andy and Daryl meet at a construction site, like, for secrecy or something, but it really just kind of looks like gay porn.
It's so gay porn.
I love a good construction worker fantasy, like that OneMen.com video where William Seed fucks a guy through a wall, like it's season 6 of Buffy. I'm into that shit.
Wow. You, Madge, you taking notes?
I got you guys. I'm just gonna keep listening to this episode and write you a whole fan fiction around your wish list.
I really hope that you do, because I really want Phoenix and I to take turns reading it. I want it, you know, so bad.
It would probably be, honestly, like, you know, I'm gonna see what I can do.
Andy tells Daryl that all of this fucking bullshit is his ex-girlfriend's fault, and Rodriguez hears this because, spoiler alert, he's a demon. And his eyes turn red and he just fucking screeches, which is what I imagine sirens like in the morning.
Basically. We kind of skip this. If I could just cut back a minute. I really like the part where after Prue kills Alec, where Daisy is like soups, like jazzed about it. And she's just like, thanks. I hated that guy.
I actually did have a lot to say about that death scene because I loved it.
Oh yeah, talk about it. Talk about it.
I love that Daisy is relieved, because you see a lot of this in like abuse storylines, like in shows and movies and stuff, where sometimes if the guy dies or gets arrested or something happens, and sometimes his victim will be like, she'll be like, I know, like, he was a bad guy, but I still loved him. And I think that reaction is very understandable. But I also want to see more stories where, like, the survivor, like, experiences anger and hatred for their abuser, because those are very real human emotions. And again, part of the healing process. And we don't see it enough. Like, I love these stories where survivors stay kind and soft and everything, despite what they've been through. But I also want to just see, like, some, you know, sometimes I just want to see you go, like, full anger and hatred about it. And of course, we don't see Daisy have, like, a freak out about it or anything, but watching her not, she's not sorry that he's dead. And that is what I love.
I totally get what you're saying. This kind of goes back to what I was saying about, like, you know, media about violence done well, like serving a higher purpose. It makes me angry when I see, like, survivors, like, forgiving their abusers or attackers or, like, something like that. And, like, every time I've been told that, like, the best way to heal is to forgive, that makes me so fucking angry. I hate that. And that's what I like in this episode, where, like, they're just like, you know what? This abuser, let's just fucking kill him and be happy that we killed him.
Yes.
Like, I'm for it. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, because, yeah, and you hear a lot of times, like, too, and you see this in stories, and it's a real life experience where people will be like, no, don't stoop to his level or whatever. And I'm like, no. Like, I don't hate him for the same reasons, like, he hated me. Like, I hate what he did to me. And I think we should be allowed to have that space to, like, experience that and, like, say that out loud.
He can fucking die.
Yeah. And, like, so to see Daisy's just, like visible relief that he is gone is vindicating.
Phoebe tells Prue that everything is fine, even though everything literally sucks. It was just, it was not a good day.
Yeah, for sure.
And they talk about how Prue never appreciated how much strength Phoebe has to have a premonition, even though it's nothing compared to what Cordelia goes through when she has visions.
True. Like, it ain't that deep, Phoebe.
Phoebe makes some cocktails that I'm pretty sure I would be allergic to. Turns on some music, and they get shit-faced in the kitchen. What a touching ending to a really intense episode.
For sure.
I'm surprised they don't get shit-faced in the kitchen at the end of every episode, honestly. Right?
That's how I would deal with it. Although, can you imagine, like, being the charmed ones? Like, wouldn't you be, like, even so afraid to, like, get drunk? Because, like, what if you're drunk and a demon attacks? Like, sometimes I can barely handle, like, getting into bed, you know? Like, I can't fight a demon.
Those ones you just gotta let go.
So we did experience a couple different deaths today, but I feel like it should be pretty unanimous.
I'm going to give Kill of the Day a resounding Alec. Bye, girl. Bye. Kill of the Day. Sorry, I don't know.
If I were going to rate this episode, I would think I would give it 3 dead boyfriends.
Because Andy's up next. Snap, snap. If I were going to rate this episode, I would have to give it 2 black balls, which, as we've stated, I much prefer to blue balls.
You know what? If I had to rate this episode, I would rate it 1 unstable internet connection on my end that's ruining this entire experience.
Madge would rate it the worst experience of her life.
Damn it.
10/10 would not recommend. WBR is a shit show and she's not coming back.
I'll come back when my internet connection is more stable than I am.
Well, that is a low bar.
So tell us a little bit about your book before we sign off.
Yeah, I totally want to give you a chance to plug your book, girl.
Thank you. Thank you. So my book is called Jailbait. You can buy it on Amazon by Mimi Duncan. You can't really miss it. It's a bright pink cover. It's got handcuffs on it, the whole deal. And I think, honestly, if you like this episode, if you like the themes of this episode, I think you would probably enjoy the book, because I tackle and like kind of deconstruct the same things about like masculinity, the after effects of abuse, rekindling your ideas of intimacy after trauma, and like rebuilding kind of like your self-esteem. It is a romance novel. Essentially, the main character is dealing with PTSD from a past relationship, and she meets a new guy who happens to be in prison with her ex-boyfriend, and they kind of spark up a relationship, and it's just about them working through like the limitations of this relationship, like the physical distance as well as the emotional journeys that they're both dealing with and going through, and how they kind of like tackle those things together. And God willing, I will have the sequel done by the end of this summer. But for now, Jailbait is on Amazon. You can buy it there.
Go check out Mimi's book. Siren, if somehow they want to, where can the people find you?
Well, I can't imagine why you would, but you can follow me on Facebook at Siren Spectacular Non-Binary Meme Witch. You can follow me at Twitter and Instagram at Siren Spectacular, or you can watch my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow me on Twitter at Phoenix Arcana _. You can follow the podcast across the board at WBRcast on all social media platforms. Please remember to like, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. That'll gives you that option. Really helps us out in reaching a bigger audience and growing the show. Mimi, would you like the people to find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Babbling Madge. That's M-A-J at the end of it. And then from there, I have a link tree on all my socials that'll take you to my other socials and to Amazon.
Amazing.
Well, before we wrap this up, Madge, I just want to say that even though this wasn't the technological dream that you were hoping for, I've had a blast having you on the show. And hopefully next time you can figure out how to get your goddamn computer to work. But really, it's been lovely spending these long ass tedious 3 hours with you.
Oh, God, it has been so long. No, I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I will definitely come back.
All right, all you soon-to-be dead boyfriends.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye.
Bye.
Witchcraft sucks, doesn't it?